Welcome to the 3 Men in a Retrospectives look at the Incredible Hulk series.
How long has it been since you felt real pain?
Part of Percolated Media's full Marvel podcast series.
It's a wonderful plan, isn't it?
Join Matt.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Adam.
You look like a massive nerd, even around other scientists.
And Garrett.
The third was some giant, if I can believe the descriptions.
As they look at various film iterations of the Incredible Hulk character.
I hate them.
Wait, I just got here. Who do we hate?
From Bill Bixby to Eric Bana.
You could always close out the world when you wanted to.
The three co-hosts will review 4 Hulk TV movies, as well as the 2003 Ang Lee-directed film.
No one can take that kind of punishment.
So prepare to Hulk yourselves out, podcast listeners. The Percolated Media Incredible Hulk Retrospective begins now.
In each of us, there lives a kind of beast made of rage. Years ago, I used science to study this beast, to bring him out of me. I used gamma radiation to release him, but I used too much.
The Death of the Incredible Hulk. Air date of February 18th, 1990. Budget not applicable. And this was directed back-to-back by Bill Bixby. So back-to-back. And will we have a back-to-back example of false advertising in the title? Because as we talked about last week, movie sold itself on having a trial. And it's the one time in my life where I was pissed that I missed any semblance of jury duty. And you can't get any more definitive than calling something the death of the blank. Adam, as a fellow comic book fan like myself, death and comics don't really go together.
No, it's that longstanding joke. No, death and comics mean nothing unless you're Uncle Ben. That's it.
If you are Uncle Ben, Thomas and Martha Wayne, or any sort of father figure involved in an origin story, you're marked for death. Especially when you're talking about main characters, your mainstay superheroes, of which the Hulk technically is, but he's also not. Begs the question, Garrett, how do you kill off a character that seemingly is unkillable in every form of media?
Well, to answer that and what I thought was going to happen with this, I'm going to take you back to when I first saw advertisements for this thing. And with comic book movies, once again, in the stratosphere, because Batman 89 had been out 6-7 months at that point. It had just been released on videotape, and I got it for Christmas that year. I could not be more excited. The reason is because how I thought they were going to do it is in the advertisements, you see him in that force field. You see him at one point in this, he is in the machine that is going to take the Hulk away from him. And I thought the death of the Incredible Hulk would have meant they were going to kill not David Banner. They were going to kill the entity that is the Incredible Hulk, and he would get to live the rest of his life as a human. That's what I really thought they were going to do when I first turned this on back in 1990.
I had no clue what to expect, in large part due to the fact that this show, from what I know of it, is very morose, and I just couldn't see something like this having a fully happy ending. But I also know that the Hulk, it's a joke in the comics that he says the angrier Hulk gets, the stronger Hulk gets. And they've done so many things to the Hulk in the comics, like he has been hit by nuclear bombs, he has fought basically everyone from the Juggernaut to Abomination to all these other like super powerful characters, and nothing's been able to kill him. Granted, television's a different medium, and you don't have that full, I guess, history of the Hulk yet at this point. But speaking of Hulk history, this was the same year that development for a feature film, as in one intended to go to theaters, was established, because this was right after everyone's favorite punching bag, especially in the Marvel fan base, Avi Arad, and Galen Hurd, both names we're going to talk about considerably going forward in this retrospective. While this was coming out, they were simultaneously planning a Hulk feature film that was unrelated to the TV show. It was going to be, you know, Hulk on the real big screen. But for reasons we'll talk about next week, didn't really get started until a couple years after this, and then took 13 years for that project to get made. And we'll talk about all the hands that went through next week. But one thing worth noting in this instance, there was a planned sequel for this, which we'll talk about the circumstances of that at the end. But for both real life reasons and certain behind the scenes reasons.
And ratings reasons, because this thing didn't, nobody watched this besides me and my dad.
And part of the reason, I think, is this one did not have the draw of other Marvel characters making appearances. You know, there's no Hulk, there's no Daredevil, there's no other superhero you could really sell this on. Now we're back to Hulk as the solo star.
However, there were plans. There were concepts. They were planning on bringing She-Hulk on this thing. And if you look online, there are makeup tests of Brigitte Nielsen in She-Hulk makeup and garb. And my God, guys, like, we may have dodged a bullet with her not being in this. But they did do concepts, and they were planning on She-Hulk. And at one point, they were even going to have Iron Man in this, which, with a TV budget in 1990, there was no fucking way that could have been pulled off. But yeah, She-Hulk was on the table for this until they came up with the script, and they scrapped that pretty quickly.
And they also had talked about making a character in this eventually She-Hulk down the road. But I guess you could argue we have a character in here who is basically a stand-in for Black Widow.
Completely.
For all intents and purposes.
Yep.
Before, I mean, look, Black Widow, up until the Scarlett Johansson played her, she was never like A-list. She was always a supporting character to Nick Fury. So I don't think that would have been like a draw for the hardcores. But as far as the Brigitte Nielsen thing goes, because that opens up an interesting conversation, She-Hulk would have just been very hard to cast, because you probably would have had to have had the same person play both parts. You couldn't do what you're doing with Bixby and Ferrigno, because you also don't have the excuse She-Hulk is nowhere near as big, and she's fully articulate when she's She-Hulk. It's not a, you know, Jekyll and Hyde thing where the latter, the monster, is, you know, monosyllabic and unintelligent. And the problem with that is, well, when I think of intelligent, well-spoken actresses, Brigitte Nielsen is at the top of my list.
She loves her foofy. I mean, that, you know, Red Sonja was a massive... God, I can't do it.
She was on the, I'm not going to say A-list, but just a few years before, she was in Beverly Hills Cop 2. It's not like
Rocky Four.
Yeah. Years before that, she was on Hollywood lips at this point. And you know what? I'm surprised they didn't go that route, honestly. Although, budgetary reasons. And my God, did this movie, there's no budget out there for this movie. But fuck, we talked about budgetary cuts last week. This week, oh my God. Apparently they couldn't afford a fucking shirt to tear in this movie. And if you can't do that with your main title character, don't try bringing another superhero in this. And I think that's the only reason why we don't have those characters here.
No, and up to this point also, you had the thing of, I feel like if this wasn't sold as the ending, and look, we talked about the ratings, Garrett, you mentioned that they were significantly lower than the previous two. If you didn't have that sort of a hook, this probably would have done even worse from a viewership standpoint. Because at least with killing him, you get the people who watch the show saying, well, I gotta see how it ends. And the plan also was, in the same way that the last week's show was supposed to spawn a Daredevil show, this was going to spawn a She-Hulk show, which honestly would have made all the sense in the world additionally, because it likely would have been like a lawyer procedural type of show, which is very easy to do on network television. I mean, how long has Law and Order been on the air?
I think Law and Order had just started around this time.
That kind of show, that kind of time frame, I mean, you have $6 million man leading to the Bionic Woman. There's good history in having that kind of spinoff. And I think they could have done a lot worse than having a She-Hulk spinoff, especially one with Nielsen. I think it could have, in that time frame, probably been a better way out than what we got.
And all you had at this point really was Supergirl for the superhero starring women films. She was the only one, because it took them a long time to make a Wonder Woman movie, and Marvel never really, I don't know who at this time would have been like the safest bet for a female superhero film from the Marvel standpoint, because a lot of the best characters are supporting. I think of like Storm with the X-Men. I think actually most of the female X-Men characters are some of the best in Marvel's pantheon, but you can't have just one X-Man leading a solo movie unless they have claws and are played by Hugh Jackman.
Well, yeah, and you're kind of taking my thunder for pretty much my review of this movie, in that the lead up to the other two, I mean, even Thor, you know, which all of us made fun of, but at least he had another character to bounce off of, you know, to play off of. In this, it's like he doesn't have any of those characters, and you can't advertise any of those, and people he does have, well, we'll talk about.
And this was also the same year as a Captain America movie that was supposed to go to theaters that wound up in the video stores.
Can't wait to talk about that one.
Oh, I can wait, trust me. And one last thing before we get into the movie, because quite frankly, I don't think there's as much to talk about as we've done with the previous few, but it's just hard to definitively kill off characters in any form of comics. Because we, around this time, we were a few years from now going to have the death of Superman, which sold a ton of comics, but had the permanence of the sun going up and the sun going down every single day. And as far as like Marvel goes, there were jokes about, I mean, Adam, how many times did characters from the X-Men get killed off and get resurrected?
It was a weekly occurrence. It's the constant enough that they built an entire Krakoa freaking line recently was built around resurrection. It's become such a joke.
And look, 1990, Marvel was not, a lot of their big comics were going to start entering their down periods. Mm-hmm. And Hulk never really as a comic sold especially well. But you think about the 90s also, pretty soon after this, we got a Hulk TV show, animated TV show. It didn't last very long, but it showed that people were still interested in this character to a degree, which is why they also started talking about doing a movie. But speaking of talking about a movie, we actually do have a film to get into. And it opens with... Okay, I'm going to get into this right now. So the last movie ended with Banner sort of rediscovering purpose in life. You know, he found a kindred spirit in Matt Murdock, who basically told him to get over yourself for all intents and purposes and get back to doing what you love. So I thought we were going to have him working as a scientist again in a lab, but still doing conditioning for trying to cure himself. Instead, he is working as a janitor to try to get his foot into a research facility, even though he's highly qualified. And in addition, Bill Bixby felt the need to attempt to portray someone who's mentally handicapped.
Oh my God. Right off the bat, I'm looking at this and Tropic Thunder comes to mind when I'm watching this, the line from that movie. And you know what's funny is I feel that this is Bixby trying to win an Emmy. He's trying so hard. This is Sean Penn in I Am Sam, trying so hard to play this card to get that sympathy vote. And we're going to see him act throughout the course of this. You know, his final line, I think, is an attempt for that as well. This is borderline offensive. I cannot believe how stupid this comes off right off the bat.
Can't say what I want to say, but go ahead and watch Tropic Thunder. Yeah. Robert Downey Jr. explains what you don't go. It's awkward. It's offensive now, but even back then, it's awkward and really weird. And did they decide to reuse the shop set from Stephen King? Because this, I feel like we've been in this building before. I've seen these hallways.
This looks like the shop from frickin', from Firestarter.
Yep.
And honestly, I wish they took this to the shop to have some mechanical work done on it, because holy crap, this thing, not that the previous two movies had enormous budgets, but you could see they put more thought into their economics, you know, with the Thor Thunder effects, and they actually paid for Daredevil to do some martial arts, but in this one, they barely had enough money to paint the sets that they're working on. And yeah, I think the last film, Bixby maybe felt like he could take a backseat because he was pulling double duty. It felt a lot like when Leonard Nimoy started directing the Star Trek movies. Here he goes full Shatner, and this comes off a lot as a vanity project, which I never felt with the last one, and I certainly went into last week's expecting that, because he was writing, directing, starring. But I think the 1-2 punch of him directing and starring, but also this being sold as, like, the death, I'm sure in his mind he thought he had to, like, make this go full Shakespearean tragedy, and I just don't think he had the talent, either behind the camera or in front of the camera, to realistically pull this off.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. You mentioned Shakespeare, of course. In watching the TV show, I have been going through the TV show since we started this retrospective. And this TV movie is that whole show. And I swear to God, this guy, for 5 seasons, he has been the same sap of complaining about the fact he's changing into this big monster. He wants to cure being away from this big monster, even though everybody who watches the show wants him to turn into the big monster. And of course, in this movie as well, he's going to fall in love. Everything about that show is here, but you're right. I think the vanity is there too, because concerning what he starts off as and what he ends up as, this is him trying to make that last ditch effort to win an Emmy.
It's also trying to go full circle, because they reference the lab fire from the pilot. So it's really trying to be both a finale of the show, but also be as close to a feature as you could do on television. But he's also going under a different name. It's David Bellamy. I mean, if you're going to keep changing your last name and nobody can figure it out.
And keep getting jobs. Change
your first name too, at least.
Yeah.
Did they not do background checks in any of these places he worked at? This is the Howard the Duck problem all over again, where he's working at a brothel, and I'm like, okay, how is he getting money? Are they just handing him cash? I felt like, not to get into the movie too much overall, but I felt like there was a little bit more logic in Howard the Duck's work environment than we get in this, because it just doesn't make sense. Why is he a janitor? Why is he pretending to be disabled? I'm picking nits already.
That he does it over and over. It's the Obi-Wan Kenobi problem of Obi-Wan changes his name to Ben. It's part of you, like, that's the wrong way to change your name, partner.
He might as well put on a fake mustache and a Spanish accent.
Oh, he's going to put a fake mustache on by the end of this.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, this is where Justice League got it from.
No, because he got it from Knight Rider, because Michael Knight did the same thing 7 years before, right, Adam?
Oh, God. But he's working because he's trying to get into a research facility near Portland, Oregon, because he found out that one of the doctors there, Dr. Pratt, may hold the key to curing his condition. And he figured this out how. Like, this is the problem I have with this movie. It's the part of it is with these movies, they're not interconnected. Like, they're kind of like standalone, but you need the prior knowledge. So as a result, they don't feel like one piece. But I'm just annoyed every time it's like, oh, maybe this guy will have the cure. And they never figure out why. And I'm also like, dude, it's been 6 years. Why don't you just learn how to own it? You've had not that many issues.
Yeah. Matt, this is 5 years. This is that TV show. It's incredible the fact that this is the same story. And when I see the death of the Incredible Hulk, I want a sense of urgency. I want a sense that we're going to be leading to something. But in watching this, even back in 1990, when I sat with my father to watch this, I'm like, this is just like a regular episode of the TV show. There's no urgency here whatsoever.
You kind of captured my, when we started this, how does Adam feel about the Hulk and why I never really cared. I think every story ends up being redundant. We'll see how that gets in the next couple weeks when we get into movies, but man can't control his emotions and he wants to. That's all it is. And I think you can only do so much with it.
You're limited by the constructs of the character because you run the risk of whenever you do big changes to these characters, the portion of the fan base is resistant to change. And it's also a medium where a lot of characters are not really allowed to evolve. Some are.
Wait. Did you say comic fans don't like change?
Yeah.
And are opinionated?
I know. I might as well be saying the earth is flat to some people. But the Hulk, one of my problems, and we kind of talked about this on the first Hulk show, one of the reasons why I don't care for the character as a solo act is, and this piggybacks on Adam's point, is I feel like he's very limited with the kind of stories you can tell if you're dead set on sticking to the norms. Because while a character like Superman, a lot of times, there's the conventions, you know, the Daily Planet and the glasses and Lois Lane. You could tell a lot of different stories because I think there's, you know, Batman, Spider-Man, those characters have also been allowed to evolve. The Hulk, for a large part of his history, has been stuck in neutral. And it took, like I said, the Peter David run for the, you know, with the Gray Hulk and some of the stuff they did later on where they actually, like, divorced Banner and the Hulk as separate entities are good. And also, I like the stories where Hulk is just the Hulk. And is a mindless monster. That's why I think he works good as a villain or an antagonist, and that's why I liked Planet Hulk so much. That or Hulk, eventually, because that story's also fun to talk about in the pantheon of Marvel. But he's getting close with Dr. Pratt, even though he only sees a custodian. So apparently this is also a world where, even though this doctor or this, there's a scientist that works there, I think it's the same one, will recognize him later on. Because he called him by his last name. So this makes no sense that he can't recognize him here as the janitor. I guess the clothes work in the same way that Superman's glasses work. And Banner doesn't even have I call him Banner. I keep thinking they changed the last name to Bellamy, like permanent. Like he went to the court and got that legally changed, but he didn't. He keeps sneaking into the guy's office and making corrections. He's filling in the gaps, but...
Matt, Matt, you're missing the machinations of how he does that. Every night, they show this whole thing where he starts a tape, and he puts it at the other end of the room, and then goes to the other end and gets a key card. We are spending 30, 40 minutes of him going through these doors, and it is so enraging. Already, I'm like, where is the urgency? We're going to get a Hulk scene of him pushing off muggers. Guess what? We saw that on the TV show 100 fucking times. Come on, push the story along of him being the death of this being the death of the Incredible Hulk.
Well, it never feels like he's on a ticking clock. So the whole death thing feels very contrived. Because, like, you could have done this where, like, the Hulk, the gamma radiation is, like, killing him. like it's finally reached his blood cells or whatever, and he's got to get the Hulk out of him or else he'll die. But instead, he takes all of his time sneaking around. He keeps sneaking in every night and changing the blackboard. But he's also not taking pictures, so all it takes is someone noticing that, yes, I didn't write this, and clearly this guy doesn't work with a whole lot of other scientists, so it makes Banner's not acting with a whole lot of agency.
No.
He's just, like, looking around, and he's sneaking around like Spider-Man 2, which also annoys me. This reminded me of the five of you that played this, the tie-in game for the Ang Lee movie.
I played it.
There are sections where you play as Banner, and you have to sneak around. Like, you can't get detected. Otherwise, if you get punched, you turn to the Hulk, and the mission just ends. Mm-hmm. And you have to, like, steal key cards from people's back pockets. That's what this reminded me of. And like that, it's not fun to watch. It's not fun to play. And for the record, stop putting stealth sequences in video game, comic book video game movies. Between that, between Arkham City and Insomniac's fetish for putting it in these goddamn Spider-Man games.
Oh, my God. The damn already. Spider-Man games?
Oh, yes.
Just so you give MJ something to do?
Well, speaking of giving things something to do, Pratt finds he finally notices the changes, and it goes, oh my God, they're correct. So if Banner knew all this information, why hasn't he cured himself already?
Thanks a lot, Will Hunting.
Oh my God. Dude, it was impossible to not think of Good Will Hunting while watching this. Like, were Matt Damon and Ben Affleck fans of this movie?
I don't know anyone who should be a fan of this, quite frankly, by the time we get to the end of it. And what does the scientist do? He also sneaks around. Like, apparently this is a world where scientists just believe in sneaking up on people and no, like, face-to-face conversation. I get a lot of them are probably introverted and were beat up in high school, but fucking Pratt waits around, hides in the lab, and he catches Banner sneaking around, and Banner just stands there like a deer in the headlight. Scientist goes towards the alarm, and he asks Banner to tell him something for a reason that you, like, so I don't push this. And he says, Banner, which is the dumbest thing he could have said, although it's not going to matter because this guy's going to die. And he says, like, my name is, and he repeats it, and he goes, oh, I know you, but you didn't recognize him 5 minutes ago when he was holding a mop and a broomstick.
My God. Guys, as the fan of this show, I've been more positive on these movies than both of you. I was kind of looking forward to seeing this because while I didn't have good memories of it, I'm like, okay, how do they kill off this character? Because like I said, I hadn't seen this since it first aired. And I'm thinking, we've got to have a good development here. We got to see how this develops. Maybe my 12, 13-year-old mind back in 1990 was not up for what was going on the screen, and I could actually enjoy what was happening. And at this point, I'm not. I am so enraged that they are going through these machinations for so fucking long. And don't even get me started on the B-plot, which I know you're going to get into. It's just like, what the hell is happening? And it boggles my mind. This is the same fucking writer from last week, a script I actually praised.
And this is also one of those instances where even though it's been, what, 13 years, this guy knows everything about Banner's reputation because he read his papers.
Yeah. And by the way, where is Jack McGee in this whole thing? I know the writer and Bixby both said they wanted to put him here, but they thought they would, quote unquote, weigh down the plot if they did. That actor was doing fucking child's play. He was free to do this movie. Why not put him here to be the one who uncovers this after years and years of building it up?
Yeah, that's like the biggest thing they never pay off.
Oh my God, it pissed me off watching this. Because my memory was McGee was here. I remembered that being true, but no, that was just a false memory.
So Banner tells Pratt about the radiation overdose. That's why he turns into the Hulk. And he's basically saying, I've been doing nothing for 6 years trying to find a cure and I've made no progress. And they agree to work together and they become friends. And he gets welcomed into his family. And immediately as soon as that happened, I'm like, oh, here come the crows. Because we spend a lot of time. We meet his wife. We meet his kids. And I'm like, something's going to happen, but it's probably not going to be good. And 30 minutes in, we get to the moment, Garrett, I thought you were talking about where they were going to literally split off Banner and the Hulk as two separate things because they conduct this experiment where they're going to trigger him turning into the Hulk, but the risk is he will also die. He could also die.
Yeah, and you know what? All right, we've been saying a lot of bad things about this movie, and it deserves every single word that we say. However, I will say these effects are pretty top-notch effects for 1990. Now, later, we're going to get some pretty shitty effects, but here I'm actually kind of impressed that they were able to pull off what they did here. And, you know, we've not mentioned that this is a New World TV production, and anyone who knows New World knows the name associated with New World, which is Roger Corman. So this Roger Corman's production company that does this, and I had no idea that they were capable of effects like this. So this, I will give them complete props for.
And we also get, so the B-plot, and Adam, did your ears perk up when they mentioned they're going to cut off the funding because they don't want to engineer super soldiers?
You have no idea how much. Like, suddenly I went, okay, you got me.
Because, you know, that's sort of like, you're basically telling me Captain America is going to be involved at some point, or they're going to mention him, or hell, I would have accepted Man-Thing, because they use Super Soldier, he's tied into that in the comic, as we talked about. So that's how low the bar is. I would have accepted a Man-Thing appearance in this, and honestly, it would have fit. But because the board cuts off the funding, they decide to move up the treatment early with the experiment when we meet an Eastern European spy named Jasmine, who's ordered to steal the files.
And when they say it's going to take 12 minutes to do this experiment and have it be finished, I'm thinking, okay, 3 minutes in, something's going to happen. And sure as shit. Now, Adam, do you recognize this chick?
You got my next note.
Oh, go ahead. If you want to say it, man, you've been quiet. Go ahead.
You have no idea. I was a big fan of the Highlander TV series. Massive. And even more so, I watched every episode of the spinoff, Raven. This is Elizabeth Grayson, star of the Raven and the Highlander TV series. Adrian Paul be damned.
She was also, you know her other life?
What's that?
She slept with Bill Clinton. In 1983, in 1982, she won Miss America. In 1983, supposedly, now allegedly, I don't want to, you know, get subpoenaed or anything, but allegedly, she slept with Bill Clinton while he was governor of Arkansas, and she won Miss Arkansas. So this chick had a bit of a rep, and she took that. She would not appear in court for any of those trials or anything when Paula Jones lawyers tried getting her subpoenaed, but she tried an acting career, which pretty much consisted of the death of the Incredible Hulk and Highlander. That's her big claim to fame to me when I think about her.
And it's also weird because this is clearly supposed to be Hydra.
Yes.
Or some kind of like, would have been like the Black Widow organization. But I don't know if it was a legal thing or they didn't want to have to pay for additional rights. But between, you know, the obvious Black Widow stand-in, you know, the shadow organization hell-bent on engineering super soldiers, and they're clearly supposed to be, like, spies, I was half expecting to see the Hydra logo, but like I said, maybe they didn't want to step on Captain America's toes too much.
She's absolutely Black Widow for me in this.
Well, especially because we find out she has a sister, which is right out of, if you know the Black Widow character, at least the Natasha Romanoff version, and they do the stupid thing of, oh, the spy who's trying to get out of the life.
One last job. Oh my god. Yeah. Guys, we talked about Mission Impossible last year. I didn't think we would talk about spies until we got to Tom Clancy, which I know Adam would probably push for in the next 5 years. I'm seeing this, and a plot I had completely forgotten about was Eastern European spies being injected to this set of spies who are here to collect something that is unfinished. Guys, all of this just doesn't make any fucking sense.
Well, it's also annoying because her handler, the guy who runs this organization, he does everything cliched except for tying the sister to train tracks.
I mean, I am expecting Rocky and Bullwinkle might be the co-stars of this film at this point.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. I think I got the wrong Natasha confused because I'm looking for Boris this entire time.
I'm thinking of Mad Magazine's Spy versus Spy. Like those fucking spies. That's the kind of intellect these fucking nudniks have.
So to get her to comply, Kasha, who's like her supervisor, takes her sister hostage to make sure that she'll cooperate. Jasmine is the one who infiltrates the lab because she doesn't think anyone's going to be there. Pratt tries to stop her from taking the files, and she just love taps him into chemicals, which put him in a coma, which apparently all you need to do is just touch a beaker and your brain shuts down.
Oh my god.
Like they couldn't even afford a lab explosion.
Have you seen this budget? No, they can't afford to have a whole transformation. No, because
it's not on Wikipedia. I don't know what the budget is.
I mean, you're dealing with Roger Corman here, Matt.
Roger Corman things I greatly enjoy. Hell.
Oh, I do too, but.
You know, this won't be the last time we discuss Roger Corman and Marvel.
No.
But she pulls him out of the way of the fire because, you know, this is the spy with a heart. Even though she's probably killed dozens, if not hundreds of people in this line of work. But Banner is so upset that he turns into the Hulk, and the Hulk attacks her. So I thought we were going to get her, like, last week's show for all the positives. We never saw, like, Hulk and Daredevil fight, which is a trope you would have expected. Like, the misunderstanding that causes them to fight. You sort of get that here, but I guess they didn't want to have, like, the image of a giant monster beating up a woman, so she just gets up and runs.
Yeah, she gets up and runs, and Hulk just tears a fucking fence and leaves. But, you know, I want to throw another compliment, even though it's also going to get negated later. But I think the look of the Hulk in this, what they do with Lou and his makeup is really good. I think they finally got that look right. Put a pin in that for later, but for now, I was kind of impressed with how Lou looked in this, and it looks like he's kind of downsized a little bit since last week, but even so, for the most part, they got the right amount of green makeup on him, and he looks pretty good. So kudos to that, even though all we're doing to show the transformation is showing David's fucking white eyes, and then we cut to a scene of somebody looking at him, we're hearing commotion, and then we cut to Lou being there. It's like, Jesus fucking Christ. Everything I loved about this show is just going down the tubes with this fucking thing.
We've had two movies in a row where they've had to hide the Hulk transformation.
I fucking hate that. Budget restraints.
Lou looks amazing. I also think he looks maybe in the best shape that he's been.
Mm-hmm.
He's in TV shape. I mean, Mr. Olympia was well before this when he was losing yearly to Arnold, but he just looks massive in this film. He looks amazing. The color is great. But yeah, there is no transformation. We get a reused cut of some white irises and then flash. And then it's just fucking Hulk. So that there was more budget spent on the catering of the TV show than there is spent on the budget of this thing.
And I'll also say too, like, one thing they did get right in this is, and it's Bixby directing, so it's not like he hasn't been a part of it, but they also have Hulk going through walls, which if you watch that TV show, you're kind of waiting for him to go through walls, which we hadn't seen in these TV movies. So that was pretty
cool. When he does that, I keep thinking of Predator 2 where they're smashing through the walls.
I don't think he gives a shit.
No, and I think there's so many white irises in this movie. I have expected the freaking Goo Goo Dolls to make an appearance and do the song at the end of this movie. Because it's about as schmaltzy as that. But the Hulk still takes Pratt to safety, but he escapes the security. And we realize that the files that she took were not enough. So her handler tells her to take Banner out so that he can basically fill in the rest of the research. Because as we have seen, he knows everything, but still haven't. It's so basically like all the easy work he took care of and someone else did the hard work. So he's like, I can't sympathize with him too much because he didn't do the hard work. He just lucked out that someone had all this information. But she finds Banner because he's, as we found out throughout this entire 13 years, he's not good at hiding.
No, and Matt, you skipped over something that I wanted to point out about this chick. You know how we know she's a bad person? You know how we know she's an enemy? She's introduced playing racquetball. And my favorite thing about this movie is the fact that she has this tape recorder in the back of her pants as she's playing racquetball, and she takes it and she gives it to her boss. And I'm like, what the fuck are we doing in this movie? Oh, my God.
Oh, 90s racquetball. I miss you.
So she's told, eliminate him if you have to, which I don't believe for a second she would actually pull the trigger, because we've already seen that she has a heart of gold with the sister being kidnapped as leverage. But her co-agents also are told take her out if she reneges. And he tells Jasmine that Bella is the leader of the spy network, who is the sister. So the whole hostage situation was faked.
Yep.
So her sister is in charge. So now we're getting swerves just for the sake of having them.
Yeah.
For a character that we've never fully been introduced to.
Never been fully introduced to. She mentions her sister to Banner, I think, once in that terrible scene. And now we're getting it unfolded. And I'm like, where's the urgency? Oh my God, guys. I could not believe how fucking annoyed and bored I was watching this movie. And I say that as the fan.
And that's what's weird about this one. They suddenly made this just a 2-hour weird drama that has barely anything to do with the Hulk as a way to finish off the series. I know it was originally meant to be, you know, kind of a two-part capper to it all, but this is a weird way to go because this is just cheap-ass melodrama for 2 hours of this thing.
Well, it's also the problem of this thing's only 90 minutes.
It's 90 minutes, but when you watch it on TV, it's 2 hours.
When you watch it at home, it feels like 3 hours.
Guys, it was eternal watching this in 1990 and in 2026. I could not believe just how slow this development was and how much I did not give a shit about these Eastern Europeans. I wanted to see more of what was going on with the Hulk and his cure, and it's not happening.
Well, you gotta save your thoughts on Marvels and Eternal for 20 years down the road. That's how we actually get to that.
Nice.
So David, because she gets shot, David rescues her, takes her to her cabin in the woods, and treats her bullet wound. And I'm pretty sure I have seen this in every kind of spy thing imaginable, where I know they're going to fall in love and I know it's not going to end well. I'm waiting for this thing to pull out and leave.
Yeah, this is every fucking Metal Gear game. I'll say this, she's got a sexy back. Like, you can see why she modeled. You know, we get to see her fucking topless 3-4 times in this movie. TV topless, I should say. But just moving along, guys. I don't want to see him fall in love. We saw that for 5 fucking seasons.
I'm kind of blown away how much skin they show in this for a TV movie back then. Like that we get her full back, that it's clear they're having sex. Yeah, Banner doesn't pull out. It's kind of crazy how much they got away with here with this. I was shocked.
I would rather just be watching a Skinamax movie than at least go all the way.
Right.
And it gets even more morose. They have to sneak him into the hospital room to get him out of the coma.
Oh, God.
Which is a whole other, like, there's so many, why is this movie obsessed with him having to sneak into places? This whole movie, I'm just so fucking annoyed at Banner. All the sympathy I got from him from last week's, I felt like he learned a lesson. Now he's just back to square one. Which is also the problem of doing these TV movies that are not interconnected, because continuity doesn't matter.
No, and they weren't.
Character progression doesn't have to go from movie to movie because they're not connected.
Yeah, they weren't thinking about that back then. Even in the TV show, there was one episode where he got married and he never mentions that again in the next 2-3 seasons. The continuity in the 70s and 80s was absent. It's like it's not as interconnected as you see Marvel do now. And most movie series do now. It just wasn't. So it just kind of...
This doesn't have an excuse because, like, you look at the Bond franchise, since we're talking spies, they changed actors and didn't gloss over the fact that he was married.
No, you're right. Roger
Moore is brought up and he wasn't married to her.
I'm just saying TV-wise, you know.
No, I know. It's just, I'm so annoyed by this production. So they wake him out of the coma, which is apparently as easy as just slapping someone on the side of the face. So clearly it wasn't that bad of a coma.
I could not believe that.
Between this and the last week where we had the chick get electrocuted in the hospital room, these movies are less worse endorsements of the American medical system than the TV show House. But what makes her fully get with Banner? The Hulk saves her.
Yes.
And they now start dating. And oh my God, I could not take this seriously. And the fact that they're playing this so deathly straight. Naked Gun was more of a romance than this.
And we have montages. I mean, we have fucking Bixby's playing all the cards in this. I'm not entertained by any of this. I'm like you guys, you know. I thought I was going to be the one to come here and defend it. But I am bored to tears watching this shit.
It's amazing how little of anything is happening in this. You know, we got that mugging Hulk out at the beginning, and you got more commercial breaks than you do sightings of the Hulk throughout this.
Adam, you hadn't seen this before this recording, right?
Oh, God, no. Okay. I didn't know this existed before this.
Okay. All right.
This thing, you know, for a Hulk thing, I'm sure out of patience.
Are you about ready to turn green? Are you about ready to...
No, because there's another 30 minutes to go. I was turning blue for trying to hold my breath so I could asphyxiate myself and turn it off. So I didn't have a justification to finish it because they make plans to leave the country, which you think this would have been something Banner would have done. Like, just get out of America. Like, I'm sure there's European scientists you could find that would cure you. Although airport traffic would certainly make you Hulk out. So maybe that's the alternative. And he's fully committed. Like, we're going to run away. But it's like, no, the Pratts are still in danger. We got to go back and save them.
Oh, my God.
Which these people we've met for all 5 minutes. In addition, which I feel like I have to keep amending the absurdity of this movie. She tracks down where they're located, which is a fucking airfield for some reason. Tie them up to the train tracks. It would have at least been more interesting. This thing has so many cliches in it that I almost feel like it is a send-up of like the golden age of comics where you could do this. But I can't take this seriously.
It is so disappointing to me watching the direction that Bixby does in this movie. Because like it's called The Death of the Incredible Hulk. Do something that is death-defying. Like do something that will blow our minds. No, he is going from cliche to cliche to cliche while at the same time showing himself fall in love with a model. Oh my God. Again, move the plot along. We have Lou just kind of sitting off screen and all green, not doing anything. Guys, I'm just pissed at this point. The problem also, Matt, which you brought up earlier, I need to bring it up again. We don't have any real characters to play off of. We have these Eastern European spies, which... You might be right. They might be trying to pass this off as Black Widow. I don't know that for sure. I couldn't find anything in the research to this. But not having any of those characters like Thor or Daredevil to play off of, you have shit like this. And with him not doing that in a TV movie that's supposed to kill off this beloved character, you have nothing. And at this point, they have nothing.
Well, this reminds me a lot of the Dolph Lundgren Punisher, where he's just fighting stereotypical mobsters. Although that movie, at least you had multiple ethnicities.
Yeah.
This one, it's just clearly supposed to be the Russians.
Yes.
They don't want to actually make them Russian.
Which had already fallen at this point, hadn't they?
Right, yeah. I think the wall had collapsed. I mean, Rocky had already defeated the Soviet nation.
Which we'll talk about later this year.
So they sneak into the hangar. She gets caught. But she tries to kill herself with the cyanide pill. But this gets even more ridiculous. The police show up, which how do they get alerted? And David manages to rescue the family. So this is the only respectable thing Banner has done up to this point. He's actually saved some people. So at least he's done more than Henry Cavill's Superman did as far as saving people.
Yeah, we're an hour and 10 minutes into this hour 35 minute movie. He finally did something worthwhile.
The sister gets on the plane. She shoots the guy from Babylon 5 because I've seen that guy in fucking everything. They kept raiding the TV mainstays because this guy was also on he was on Star Trek TNG a lot. He was also the one-armed man in the Fugitive movie.
Oh, okay. The Harrison Ford one?
Yeah.
That's where I kept trying to remember where I was seeing him. You're right. That's the one-armed man.
Yeah, and person with only two arms and half a brain wrote this script. So. He gets shot. And then she gets in the airplane with, first of all, the friggin' names of this. We got the torturer whose name's Zed.
Yes.
I was thinking Zod. This is also the problem when you don't base them off characters. I have to remember these fucking names.
Yeah, I felt for you in having to do this plot and having to do these names. It felt like me doing Mission Impossible last year. But at least those majority of those movies were fun to watch and pay attention to. This one, you have to pay attention. I was just thinking of you the entire time I was watching this. I was like, oh my God, poor Matt.
Because they do the cliche thing of like, don't say I'm going to take your place and then expect to have her do nothing about it. And she's told, you know, get away. But instead, because everyone in this movie is a cartoon villain, tries to run her over with the plane. And this is no Raiders of the Lost Ark, because instead of getting a blood splatter, we get nothing because the Hulk just shows up.
Yes. It's a pretty decently staged shootout. I'll give it that. The reason the cops are here doesn't make any sense. But I do like we have a final action scene here, but oh God. Okay, continue. And then, boy, do I have things to say once he gets on the plane.
So this triggers him into turning into the Hulk one last time. Breaks into the plane, so at least we're seeing the Hulk showcases strength. She shoots him multiple times.
Okay. All right, stop. These people were running with their tails between their legs. They had given up. They were leaving. There is no reason for the Hulk to get on this fucking plane. Zero. Yet it is up for 30 seconds, and here he is to jump up and... Oh my God. Okay, continue.
Yeah, especially because the last movie ended with people escaping in a plane. But this time he's like, nope, fool me once, hell no. And okay, I understand that it's very hard to come up with a conceivable way for the Hulk to be killed. And I'm sorry, I know it's network television, but shooting a fuel tank, having the plane explode, combined with him falling out of the plane, is not enough for me.
So much.
I said, that's it. Like, in my house when I watched this.
So much of what you said enraged me. Because we saw in this movie, he jumped out of a building higher than this plane is and come out just fine. I saw it in the TV show where he was like a skydiving instructor. He posed as a skydiving instructor, fell from hundreds of feet up, landed in a house and was fine. Here, the plane is up for 30 seconds, so I don't know how high that would be. I'm probably, 300 feet maybe? And he falls, and that's it. He falls on some cardboard meant to look like cement.
Yeah, this looks like when they do those fake wipeout spots in wrestling.
Holy shit.
Clearly padded.
Yes. Good call. I'm like, what the fuck? And you're giving Lou... Okay, a lot of good things to say about Lou, but... The makeup, as he's falling, you see his abs don't have any fucking green on them. Guys, I am so pissed watching this. And fucking Bixby slows the film down, so now we have this slow-ass fucking song, which I know Adam likes, because he liked that goddamn song from The Running Man last year. I'm so fucking torn to pieces watching this movie. I could not believe the death scene they give this guy. Could not believe it.
I can't believe this is what killed him. Like, it doesn't match what we've got for all the seasons, doesn't match what we got for the movies. This is what we came up with.
Yeah, he falls, which made me think of the Ed Norton movie, too.
Yeah, and he doesn't have any burn marks on him, too, by the way. Like, I could maybe have it pass if we show him and he has some scars on him or something, but no, we're not going to do that.
No, it's just he changes back and, oh God, I'm going to get into this. So, look, we've all said Bill Bixby's not a thespian, but he's not moving. She kneels down beside him and... She says, we can be free now. And he says, Jasmine, I am free. Ugh.
You know what, though? As a 12-year-old, I was crying my eyes out watching this scene. As a guy in his 40s watching this and seeing everything that had developed around it, I didn't feel a fucking thing. I see what he's trying to do here. I'm not going to say I do like the delivery, actually. It's not a bad line. It's just the fact that it's surrounded by just a whole bunch of bullshit is what negates it for me.
Yeah, I just... I'm disappointed that this is the, like, it's not something really that cataclysmic, or like he doesn't fully give himself over as like full sacrifice. Like, it's not like, no, Logan's a high bar, and I'm sure we'll fight about it when we talk about X-Men again, but like, he literally gave his life so that the next generation could live on. There was something aspirational about that. Here, it's just, oh, I got myself involved, and I wasn't paying that much attention, and clearly I'm not as strong as I thought I was, and I just died because of this woman I met, and the scientist I met 5 minutes ago.
Jumping on a plane that I had no business jumping onto.
Yeah, like, it's your own fault, so you look stupid.
Yes.
That this is what led to your death. Oh my God, I hate this so much.
And Adam, answer my question. Did you like the song that ended this? Which, by the way, Bixby does background vocals for. Go ahead.
I was waiting for this to be done. No. I mean, it's one of the better things in this movie. That doesn't mean a lot.
I knew you were going to fucking say that. I fucking knew it.
But I'm sure as tears were wept by the 5 people that watched this at the time, exaggerating, but as we talked about, the ratings for this were not great. Jasmine and company and the family, they're crying over him. There's no tease. We don't see his eyes change green. We don't cut to a grave. That's just fucking it. I was expecting an epilogue of some kind, or
yes,
to see a funeral scene where Jack McGee writes a editorial that covers everything that happened. I was expecting some kind of voiceover or eulogy. No, this thing just fucking ends. It's almost like they even said, all right, cut, print, move on.
Yeah, after 5 years, you'd think there'd be a better send-off.
Because my question is, how can you, Garrett, as a fan, how can you say this is a satisfying conclusion to all the history? And I know endings are hard, but man, this is the definition of anticlimactic.
It is, but to kind of defend it a little bit, even though the title suggested it, it was not meant to be the end. We'll talk about it here in a bit.
Well, it's the end of the road for us on the Bill Bixby Hulk Show for reasons we'll talk about that Garrett alluded to, but we've done all 3 TV movies, and, well, I don't think this is going to be the one we score the highest based on this conversation, but can you really blame us if you watch this damn thing? Garrett, you know, the fan, clearly this made you turn green with anger. What do you score the death of the Incredible Hulk? Will you go to this funeral?
Oh, boy. You know, I almost went from green to red while reviewing this movie and watching this movie. I will suggest this to anybody who's interested in seeing any part of this, even after listening to this conversation. I am pretty sure the last 5 minutes of this movie are available on YouTube. If you want to see the death of the Incredible Hulk, watch that incredibly terrible fall, but yet see the send-off of David Banner and him saying goodbye. That is all you need. You do not need an hour and 25 more minutes of what we just watched. We just did that for you. I was so disappointed as a 12-year-old and as a 48-year-old watching this movie. I was so angry watching this. There are so many possibilities you could have taken this. Like I said, you kill him off in an experiment or something, have him walk off into the sunset. I was just so angry, and at the very least, it means we are done with these movies and we can actually move on to feature films. And for that, I know Adam's very happy and I know Matt's very happy. But to conclude the review of this movie, yeah, it is the worst that we've seen, and I was not expecting to say that. It is a 3 on 10. I do not suggest anybody watch anything but the last 5 minutes of this. 3 on 10 for The Death in Incredible Hulk.
Well, that's the first eulogy. Adam, you going to pour more dirt on this coffin, or are you going to be the ray of sunshine from heaven? Which I doubt, but go ahead.
Yeah, Adam, you've been pretty quiet this podcast.
Maybe a little bit. I'm less angry than Garrett, and maybe that's also because, though, I'm not as big of a Hulk fan, and also because, hey, I got Elizabeth Grayson in this, but this isn't a Hulk movie, other than he shows up every now and then. This is a God, what does God need with a starship? This is a prodding drama that just takes too long, has no budget, is kind of a joke in the way that it's the production value, and I use that in quotes. I'll say this, I don't think Bixby directs it bad, but I think that he has no money to do anything with it. And I think Bixby is decent for part of this. And I like the idea that he's going to be a scientist again, but then it goes away and the side story takes over more than the Hulk story. And this is the death of the Incredible Hulk. So I guess, hey, truth in advertising, because I never thought they would do it. And at the end of this, we get the Hulk's death. So if you've seen the rest, I guess you might as well see this. But based on what we got, you know, with Thor, with Daredevil, those at least were a little exciting. There's not a lot of excitement in this. It's people talking, and that's kind of it. But it's what we got, and there's worse things out there, but this is not good. Unless you find a reason that you have to, don't watch this. It's a 4 on 10.
So in my research, I found a note that I think summarizes the thought process of this movie. It was talked about that Jack McGee would be in this movie, But after a debate between Gerald DePigo, the writer, and Bill Bixby, he realized that McGee's inclusion would overload the film without adding too much to the plot. To which my response would be, what plot? Because this thing is, it's a mess. It's got a lot of ends that are trying to be resolved and brought to the forefront. But last week we talked about how the Hulk was kind of in the background to the movie's benefit. This one, he's in the background again, and it's nobody's fault but their own. If I was a fan, I'd be pretty disappointed if this was the conclusion of something that, you know, you spend all that time getting invested and you want to see it end rather than get any sort of no closure because the show got canceled. And then you get this. It's like getting punched in the face twice, except the second one is a sucker punch because, you know, one of them you didn't see coming, one of them you did. So at least they didn't lie about the title because he does die, but maybe some things are better left to the imagination. Because as it stands, this is pretty bad. And all in all, even if someone's not a huge Hulk fan, I can't see getting a whole lot of substance out of this. And if you thought including a reporter in a movie that features hapless scientists and a Russian spy organization that is about as competent as Cobra from G.I. Joe, I don't see how you can argue that this is really that tightly plotted. It's only 95 minutes. Thank God, because if this thing was stretched to 2 hours, or if I had to watch commercials for Advil or Grape Nuts that you would have been accustomed to in 1990, I probably would have been pretty disappointed. But I'm going to be nice and give it a 4, because I'm happy it's over. Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it's over. That's my thought statement on this movie. But it was not meant to be the end, as we came to find out. Despite his death, they embraced their comic book origins and said, nope, that's not the end. We're bringing him back for a planned sequel called The Revenge of the Incredible Hulk is what it was going to be called.
And what's funny is it's hard to remember now. Me and Adam certainly remember, but there were only 3 networks around and Fox. And at this point, The Incredible Hulk was on CBS. He got canceled. So he took these movies to NBC. And once this flopped in the ratings and didn't do shit, they canceled him there too. So he had to go somewhere where nobody had gone except the Bundys and the Simpsons. He went to Fox. And Fox was set to greenlight it. And Matt, do you have the details of the plot? Because I do if you don't.
I do. Apparently, now this is from DePigo, the writer.
Mm-hmm.
Now we should also point out this didn't happen because Bill Bixby was diagnosed with cancer and sadly didn't live.
He was, but DePigo did say that actually had nothing to do with the fact that this was canceled. This was canceled a couple months before.
Yeah, this was canceled before his diagnosis. But DePigo claims that the plot was going to be Banner's revived, but the Hulk was dead. Like, he couldn't change back. So in essence, he cured himself. All it took was jumping out of a plane. So he should have gone skydiving, apparently, after the pilot, and he would have been fine. But he would have been coerced into working for the government because they're trying to recreate the Hulk. And the climax would have been him having to, like, recreate the incident to stop all the villains. So he would have essentially become the Hulk once again, and it probably would have been permanent. They had also talked about, at one point, the script would have been, it would have been the Hulk with Banner's mind, like they would have fully merged, which they've done with the Hulk. But hearing that plot, would either of you have been interested in seeing that?
Well, no, because as much as we've complimented Lou as the Hulk, if I had to see Lou try to act as David Banner, it would be laughed off the screen. No offense. It just wouldn't work. I'm kind of glad we didn't get that, but I do like kind of the origins of what you just said. I would have liked to have seen how they would have handled that, but you know what? After seeing what we just watched, probably not.
Yeah, and being that I didn't want to watch any of these, no, I'm good.
Well, nobody wanted to see it because Fox didn't pick it up, and shortly after, Bill Bixby was diagnosed with, it was prostate cancer, and he passed away in 93, so a couple years after this concluded. But look, this show left a legacy. I mean, as much as Adam and I have knocked it, to a lot of people, this is, when they think of the Hulk, this is the form of media that most people think of.
And so I'm one of those, and you know what, we're going to see it in the next couple times we review Hulk. You know, we're going to be reviewing Hulk-centered movies, one next week and one down the road. It's left a legacy, and for that, you cannot fault in. You know, Lou is not going to be in the purple pants, but he is going to be a part of the next couple movies that we do that revolve around the Hulk. So people, and I still, to this day, love this series and love everything about the series. And these movies, I've had a really good time discussing them with you guys. I've even had a pretty decent time watching a couple of them. But this one, like I said, watch the last 5 minutes on YouTube.
I can't knock Bill Bixby. I think he meant a lot to the character, and I think there's a lot to be said for the longevity and what he brought to it and meant to it, you know, and with Lou Ferrigno. So, you know, hats off to it. I don't like the way that it finished. It wasn't my jam, but it wasn't really designed for me. But I can't help but note that without this, we don't get to a lot of places we are today. So hats off to him.
No, and it did for Marvel Television what Adam West Batman did for DC. It was the a live action originator, except it obviously opposite tones, but, you know, in the same way that it took Tim Burton's Batman to re-educate people on Batman and create a new standard for pop culture, Bill Bixby was the Hulk for damn near 30 years for everybody, because it took 13 years from this movie to get Hulk on the big screen. But it took a long time for a lot of reasons. So it was not due to lack of interest, but we did get a Hulk film in 2003. So we're talking, you know, after Blade and X-Men and Spider-Man sort of brought Marvel out of the depths of bankruptcy and creative hell, they got a big screen Hulk movie with a big budget, with all kinds of stuff we're going to talk about. But as a little bit of a tease, we got to mention, when this was coming out, did either of you give a shit? That's my question to both of you.
This was my event movie of 2003. This was the movie I was looking forward to most. When I read all the magazines, which I used to read back then, Premiere, Total Film, all of them, and this was on the cover, I would read them cover to cover about this movie. I was so excited for this, guys. And Ang Lee was a respected director who, while he didn't have any comic book origins, he was really good at human stories. And that's all I wanted in a Hulk movie, was to tell an arc about the human story behind Bruce / David Banner and what the Hulk meant to him. And plus, Lou Ferrigno's a really big dude. But the fact that they had CGI at their disposal was another big draw for me. So I could not have been more excited for this. I marked it on the calendar, and I made a whole day of it the Thursday before it came out to see it opening day. I was stoked.
Well, the same year that Return of the King, Pirates of the Caribbean, yeah, Daredevil, X-Men 2, this was the one that stood out.
This was the one. Yeah, there was no Star Wars movie that year, so yeah, this was the one that really stood out.
All right, Adam, you know, we had gotten certainly far more respectable superhero films with Blade, X-Men, Spider-Man. We got legitimacy. And then you add on an Oscar-winning director with Ang Lee. You know, certainly, as we'll talk about, I would argue the most audacious director they had ever chosen for a superhero film at the time. And you could still make that argument now.
Yes.
Did any of those ingredients excite you for a live-action Hulk movie in the year of our Lord 2003?
Did, and that's what actually had me excited, was who was involved with this. There was a lot of play, not even Access Hollywood at the time, but TV entertainment channels that you would have talking about the look of the Hulk and all the controversy about that. But everybody who was involved with this is what had me excited. From the actors, the actress, the director, I was like, okay, they're taking a big swing. And, you know, movies had come a long way. This was a big year for it, and I was ready. And Hulk was something that I was excited to see in a movie theater.
I also need to mention, too, me and Adam were talking a little bit before you got on the call, Matt, and that me and Adam were not talking around this time, so our excitement for it was completely separate from each other. Yeah, this was a huge event. Now, for you, you were, what, 10 when this was out?
Not even. And I was not a Hulk fan. I was never a Hulk fan, but the fact that, we'll talk about the advertising more next week, but the Super Bowl teaser they did, they only hint at the Hulk. And they touch on people's nostalgia because they put in the "you wouldn't like me when I'm angry" line. You get little glimpses of the Hulk, like in CGI form. I think that was a great way for me, as someone who didn't give a shit about the Hulk, to get excited. But on its own, like if you told me, oh, the Hulk's getting a movie, you want to go see it? I would have been like, yeah, but I would not have run out to see it. But I did go because my grandfather took me because he wanted to see it because he liked the Bill Bixby show. And the movie, you know, came out and it mixed as being kind when it was released, and it didn't do the box office numbers that something like Spider-Man or X-Men did. And to this day, 20 years later, it is still a highly discussed movie.
It is. And to piggyback off what you just said, I have never discussed this movie long form with anybody, and I am really looking forward to next week because I finally get to really talk about this movie that I think there's a lot more to than people really give it credit for. That's not saying whether I like it or not. I'm just saying there's so much depth that Ang Lee adds just from his name alone when he attaches it to a project, that there's so much to discuss. And I am really looking forward to finally getting to discuss it on these airwaves.
I also have to mention, I saw it with a friend, and I asked him why he liked it. We were both 10 years old. He said, I got to see the Hulk throw a tank. That is the ringing endorsement, because you also had a large portion of people that walked out of this movie disappointed because there wasn't enough Hulk smash.
Yeah, but you know what? I had a friend who I went with who said the exact same thing. And he was 8 years older.
You know, you can compare this movie, and we'll talk about it next week. The reaction to it is very much Superman Returns.
Oh, yeah.
Where you had people who loved it because it was more, as we'll talk about, there's themes and it's touching on nostalgia in the same way that Superman Returns did, although nowhere near to that degree. But you had a lot of people complaining because it wasn't a real, like, punchy superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
For the Hulk, a lot of people are like, they didn't want that because it doesn't suit the character in certain people's minds. But, you know, yeah, Oscar-winning director, Eric Bana wasn't a huge name we'll talk about, but, you know, you got Jennifer Connelly, big star, just won an Oscar.
Just won an Oscar.
Interesting supporting cast. And like I said, a director and now a brand with Marvel that, thanks to X-Men and Spider-Man, people were willing to give it, you know, certainly more clout than they would have in like 1998. Like if this came out pre-X-Men, it probably would not have gotten certainly would have gotten Ang Lee. But yeah, until next week when, man, a movie that I'm very, very excited to talk about because we, to Garrett's point, never discussed it. And I think it's one of the, not to give my thoughts, but it's one of the most important superhero films as far as certainly the director alone. You can't undersell, although Ang Lee was not supposed to direct, and we'll certainly talk about that because that's part of the production history. But until next week when we reveal Hulk 2003, Ang Lee was right. It's a podcast. Thank you, gentlemen.
That I'm dead. But they also think that this creature inside of me is a murderer, and they may someday be right. It's not human. Maybe it's what we were before we became human. Maybe it's the worst in us.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Do you really believe that I am separate from you?
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
My mother always used to tell me getting angry doesn't help.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, films of the DC universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Mission Impossible film series, the Jaws franchise, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, Avatar, and so much more.
I feel somehow we're alike.
I guess we could all learn something from the big goof.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I made a stink bomb once. Cleared out the whole school. What a wonderful fiasco. The whole school. My friends kept my secret, but forevermore they called me Stinky. Stinky!
scheduling done by Matt.
Look at him. He lives for every second. To hell with tomorrow. Not a worry in the world. The worry he leaves to me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
What is it that you pound on my door with such insolence?
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Security ought to be beefed up a lot more. In a place like this, you can't be too careful.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network. And all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Are you ready?
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Where will you go?
The city.
That's not a good place. People get lost in that city.
You have to stop someplace.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production, copyright 2026, and any and all sound clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
You take my secret with you, and I leave mine with you. I have a brother in the world now. Yes, you do. My hand is in front of
you. I know.
You can leave us now.
Exactly. And hey, next week we get to do a feature film version of Hulk. Aren't you excited?
Finally. Oh, I know you're excited as shit.
I've been wanting to talk about this movie for so fucking long.
You're like, oh boy, here we go, fighty.
You and I did not talk back then, but that was such a huge event movie for me. I can't wait to really dive into this when we get to next week, but that movie, I was so fucking excited for it.
All right, give me a countdown and we will get this over with.
That's such a great way to start things.
Because I want to talk about an interesting Hulk movie.
Okay, we're going in three.
It's gonna be a while.
Shut up. 3, 2, and 1.
The death of the Incredible Hulk.